Please, the court, good morning. My name is James McKinley. I'm with the Indiana Federal Community Defender's Office in Indianapolis. As a small town away from Indiana, I thought it was a pleasure to come to Chicago, even though driving the Chicago Expressway would be rather nerve-wracking. And I say God help the person that drives the speed limit or tries to maintain a safe distance between them and the car in front of them.
You need to get up at 3 in the morning and take that train.
Well, next time.
That's right. And did you take the Skyway?
I did.
And the tollway?
I did. It was a trip.
Well, you get used to it.
I was thinking that if Chicago's finest should pull me over for trying to keep up with the pros of speed and distance, I would probably have no alternative but to acknowledge that I had in fact been speeding and been following too close. I would have accepted responsibility in the moral sense.
Well, when this case is over and the opinion is issued, you can take tips from Judge Caney. He drives it all the time.
What I would ultimately do is I would pay the ticket, because my explanation for why I was speeding or following too close really doesn't bear on the issue of what that I am actually legally and ethically to be held accountable for my conduct, which brings me specifically to Mark Miller's case. Mr. Miller is appealing the sentence that was imposed following his plea of guilty to possessing child pornography. Pornography that he admittedly downloaded off the internet onto his home computer, maintained on his home computer. His wife found it, called the police. Police came in, conducted an analysis of what was on the computer, and found a number of images of child pornography, further materials that were intermixed with literally thousands of very graphic images of legal but offensive and admittedly bizarre images, including not only adult pornography and child erotica, but graphic images of autopsies, violent scenes of death, accident scenes, executions. When Mr. Miller was confronted with this, he acknowledged, yes, he had downloaded this material. He admitted to possessing it, he admitted it to his wife, he admitted it to the police. Ultimately charged, he admitted it to me. He admitted to the prosecutor, he admitted to the probation office, he admitted it to the court. He's never denied it. And during the course of his pretrial supervision, he sought and obtained counseling from a local veterans hospital, understanding this command, with no prior criminal record, no history of sexual misconduct, sexual abuse, sexual dysfunction, or pedophilia. He sought obtained that counseling to try to better understand himself, what his motivations might have been, and to deal with the pressure and the reality that he's going to go to prison for a while. And throughout the course of this investigation and throughout the course of this case, I submit that Mark Miller did just about everything anyone could do to accept responsibility, to acknowledge that he was, in fact, legally and ethically accountable for possessing these materials. And the district court denied that acceptance of responsibility adjustment because it simply didn't buy his explanation as to why he had these materials.
Let me tell you what my problem is here, Mr. McKinley. I honestly believe that some judges might have said, yes, Mr. Miller, that's a very unusual explanation, but there is psychiatric testimony that would say this is a possibility. But what you had here was a judge who didn't buy that. And the district court is in a better position than we are to evaluate, the sincerity of the remorse I don't, you know what our court can do about something like that when the district judge, after hearing everything, believes that a defendant has rationalized his involvement in the crime in a way that would shirk full responsibility.
Well, let me address your concern, Your Honor. As you know, there's three criteria for that this court has set out to obtain this reduction or this adjustment. And the point you raised goes to the first criteria, that is whether the person sincerely expresses his remorse and regret and contrition for the offense. The other two criteria I don't think are at issue here. There's no argument, there's been no contention that he was trying to lie about the conduct. He neither falsely denied nor frivolously confessed any relevant conduct. The issue has to do with the district court's perception as to whether he expressed remorse. He was in fact remorseful and contrite for the offense. The response to it is possession. And I submit that the person's motive for committing the offense should not be a basis for denying the acceptance of responsibility. A person can, it'd be like a bank robber, Your Honor, who would acknowledge that they are, in fact, the person and they actually did what they did, but want to make the explanation that perhaps they did it because they wanted to feed the poor. I had a client who was an illegal reentry case. He said the only reason he came back and was using false identification is because he wanted to become a permanent resident so he could join the armed forces and fight the war against terrorists. It's really a different issue. He hasn't been charged with child seduction. He hasn't been charged with any type of misconduct and child exploitation. He's simply proffering an explanation that he proffered in response to the government's questions on cross-examination during the course of a hearing on a motion to modify his terms and conditions of release, basically saying that he was doing this because he was fueling his depression. This was something that he had learned and come to deal with and was struggling with his private counsel, if he testified about. And I would invite the court in that regard to embrace the holding in the Gonzales case that we cited and discussed in the brief, which flat out states that motive, misstatements or lies about why a person committed the offense cannot be a basis for denying acceptance of responsibility if the person, in fact, otherwise repents the offense, accepts responsibility, and is contrite and remorseful.
Well, there are judges who have sentenced prior to the guidelines, and if you were a judge sentencing prior to the guidelines, you certainly would have taken into account whether or not you believe things that defendant was testifying to.
I can't disagree with that, Your Honor. However, since the guidelines dictate how sentencing is to be imposed and to eliminate disparity in sentencing, I think that it has to be followed consistently, and the interpretation we're asking this court to adopt is consistent with the Gonzales case.
But the first factor you described is whether or not they were sincere or not. What you're saying is the district judge, even though this was extraneous to the actual motive for the possession, or I shouldn't say extraneous to the motive, but extraneous to the crime committed, whether or not he had these particular desires or whatever. If the district judge totally flat out thinks he's lying, he's lying here, but he's not lying about the acceptance of responsibility for this particular offense, that being possession.
Well, the district judge was saying that he was minimizing the wrongfulness of his conduct. The offense here, again, is possession. He is not minimizing.
He did not believe in the all the matters coming before it. Suppose he misstated where he lived, or something totally irrelevant to the...
Well, I submit that the motive here for committing the offense was sufficiently tangential and separate.
But I'm talking about the believability of the defendant, not the motive itself, but he just doesn't believe him. That is, you lied to me then, but I'm not able to consider that at this particular point with regard to exceptional responsibility for this offense, even though I think you blatantly lied about your motives concerning this aspect.
See, my time.
You can answer the question. If you have a comment on it.
I interpreted what you said as a comment and not a question. What was the question, John?
Well, the question to you is, do you think, as the Ninth Circuit apparently believes, that you only focus on a narrow issue and not the totality of the defendant before you?
At some point, though, Your Honor, those issues become too far removed from the person's contrition for the offense. His remorse for the offense itself, and again, we're talking strictly about a possession offense here and nothing more.
Thank you. Ms. Ellis?
May it please the court and defense counsel, my name is Gail Hellert, and I was the government prosecutor assigned to this case since its beginning in February 2002. This court recognizes that the district court is in the best position to evaluate a witness's truthfulness, and it will not disturb the ruling by the district court in this case unless it is firmly convinced that the district court was mistaken when it determined that Mr. Miller's testimony on June 17 was implausible and false. In fact, this court has stated that the intuition and experience of the district court finds it uniquely suited when it rules on issuing determinations of Mr. Miller's acceptance of responsibility. The district court had before it, when it ruled in denying Mr. Miller his acceptance of responsibility points, Mr. Miller's testimony from June 17th and the testimony of two law enforcement officers from August 30th. At the sentencing, the full impact of the forensic examination of Mr. Miller's computer came to light to the district court. There were 113 subfolders that contained 11,300 images and movie files. The folders show an intricate system of sorting them in that the images were placed into the folders on dates and times after the folders were created. Nearly all of these 11,300 images were pornographic or depicted nude or semi-nude people. 1,700 to 1,750 of them depicted children, and 750 of those depicted children within the definition of Section 2256.
There's no question about all of this.
Yes.
The question is, what were his reasons and whether or not the district court accepted his reasons. The district court didn't accept his reasons.
The defense couches this question and the question by this court in terms of motive, that it doesn't mean it shouldn't matter. But that's really too narrow of a question, because Mr. Miller had an agenda when he talked about his motive on June 17th. So why does it matter that he told the truth about why he collected the images? It matters very much in this case because of Mr. Miller's agenda, namely his efforts by his testimony to go home or to go live with relatives. It matters because in this effort, he's purposely attempting to present himself as a less dangerous offender, one who would be a good candidate to live at home or with relatives while his case was pending sentencing. It mattered because to satisfy this agenda, he necessarily chose to lie to the district court to attempt to make this happen. And the result from this path that he chose is that he lost his acceptance of responsibility points.
This is your view that Mr. Miller's his stated view of the reasons that he was collecting this pornography is totally implausible. In other words, it would always have to be for sexual gratification. It could never be for a reason the reason that he stated?
That is my view. Mr. Miller's explanation had been that he started collecting the images of children to help identify them and to turn them into law enforcement.
So is it your view as to Mr. Miller's case or any human being that has ever walked the face of this earth?
Some people in our experience that we have prosecuted have or possess images of child pornography knowingly because they are traitors in the marketing of it. And they profess to only claiming or only possessing these images as a way to trade images that they really want of something else with some other individuals. That might be one explanation. But in Mr. Miller's case, our belief is that this is implausible and false, as the district court found.
Okay. In other words, you're not saying that there aren't, well, maybe you are, that there aren't individuals out there whose psyches are so disturbed they, in effect, are masochists.
Theoretically, if I understand the court's question, theoretically, people could possess images of child pornography, I don't know for what reasons, other than the sexual interest or the interest in violent sexual material. One example that I just stated, we just don't get that explanation very often. We get more times explanations that they didn't knowingly possess it, or they didn't knowingly have it, or didn't knowingly receive it. Questions like that.
His wife didn't know about this, did she?
That's correct, Your Honor. The images on the computer were contained cleverly, six subfolders within a third subfolder called Install ICQ. They weren't readily apparent to the eyes of his wife or his young daughters because it took six more subfolders in before it started the listing of 113 subfolders of the pornographic images of adults and children.
So when defendants plead guilty, they should be advised just not they have to admit their guilt with respect to the elements of the offense, but they need to also admit the motive in an acceptable way that the government and the court would find believable.
We would want a defendant to act consistent with an acceptance of responsibility. The application notes give some guidance to this, that a person must say truthfully the offense of conduct,
which he did,
absolutely he did, but that he must not falsely deny or physically contest relevant conduct. And in this case, it's just distinct because Mr. Miller testified, his choice was to testify in an attempt to not to leave the halfway house and to go home and live with relatives. Mr. Miller could have stayed silent on the issue of why he possessed the images. But to purposely lie to the district court is completely consistent with the precedent in this circuit to lose his acceptance of
responsibility. How do you know, as you stand there today, that he lied? How do you know, when there is psychiatric testimony, that he was lying? Seems to me he would have been a lot better off if he would have said, yes, this was the way I gratified myself sexually. He would have been out of prison a lot earlier.
We agree that that would have been the preferable explanation for two reasons. One, it might have lessened the perception that he was a more dangerous offender, and it would have made the district court think that he was more amenable to treatment. I am convinced that he was lying in this case because of the extensive way which his collection was sorted into their folders. The predominant nature of 11,300 images were pornographic or nude and semi-nude.
Something has to do with the other. I'm having a terrible time with your argument.
The district court weighed the credibility and looked at the structure and the content of the folders. How they were named was an important factor in this case. For example, there was a folder called Bummin that contained just pictures of bare buttocks. A picture of Kisso 2, which contained pictures of adult women kissing. There was a folder called Jane Doe, which contained images of Jane Doe, who was Mr. Miller's minor age relative. And the folder just above Jane Doe's folder was a folder containing adult pornography, and three folders below it were adult pornography. This structures were admittedly in alphabetical order, but it wouldn't have mattered where the Jane Doe folder was. It was adult or child pornography in all of them. The way they were concealed from his wife and his daughters made it such that
perhaps he wanted to conceal his childhood depression from his wife and his what I'm not getting is why all of this tells you what his motive was.
His motive is false because he said he collected the pictures first in order to turn them over to law enforcement. But he admitted he hadn't turned over a single one to law enforcement.
Well, because he found, allegedly, if you take his word for it, that it fueled his depression.
Right. He then stated that his collection was then for another reason, that is, this purpose of fueling his depression from 1994. The reason it went that he first grieved, then he got over the grief, and then he had to fuel his depression because he felt guilty for feeling better. He stated his depression was fueled over the adult sexual material, the violent material, and over the images of children. The district court found that it disbelieved his testimony, stating that the collection spoke for itself. It was an integrated collection with the Jane Doe folder right in the middle of it. The district court found that Mr. Miller's conduct demonstrated a manipulative manner of behavior. For example, he hadn't proffered the same explanation to the doctor that was evaluating him in the case. That is, he told a different story to the doctor about, I don't know why I collected the images. And I see my time is up, if I might just have one more sentence. The district court further found that Mr. Miller's collection involved a sexual interest and that his statements from June 17th were to convince the court that the situation looked worse than it really was. The district court properly denied Mr. Miller his acceptance of responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Mr. McKinney, your time has expired. Do you have anything else that you wanted to add? Give you a minute.
First of all, Mr. Miller's proffered explanation for possessing this pornography was not proffered in an attempt to obtain a benefit of getting some type of improved conditions of release. He testified on direct examination only that he was not a pedophile. His explanation for this possession was brought out through the cross-examination of government counsel. And government counsel's logic on this is simply that pedophiles typically are attracted to and collect child pornography. Mark Miller had child pornography on his computer, therefore Mark Miller is a pedophile. And he must therefore be lying about his explanation. Well, that doesn't get it here. I submit that he had a lot of other things on his computer here other than pictures of the constitute child pornography. It doesn't, you know, the presence of those images doesn't establish anything more about his propensity or his attraction to children than it would be for a propensity toward corpses or any of the other images that were contained on the computer. And again, I submit that that's really beside the point because, again, the offense here is simply a possession. And person's motive, I submit, should not be a factor in determining whether the adjustment should be applied. I appreciate the time of the court, and I'm sorry we could not address the second issue on the departure, but I'm, of course, confident the court will give that issue due consideration.
Thank you, Mr. McKinney. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.